This podcast replay is brought to you by RedRecover.com. From NFL stars like Hayden Hurst to daily warriors like yourself, their wraps and pads are designed to deliver maximum benefits with each treatment anywhere you go.
And we welcome you in for another one of our weekly RedRecover.com Inside the Paint shows. I'm Ira Winderman from the South Florida Sun Sentinel here in Fort Lauderdale. He's Kurt Heelan out in the Los Angeles area from Pro Basketball Talk and NBCSports.com. We're going to have a bunch to talk about in today's show. A lot going on. Again, if you missed any segment, they're all on the Big O Show podcast. You can catch them down the road. We're going to talk about load management. We talked about it with the crosstalk with Big O. We're going to talk about all-stars, starters being named tomorrow, reserves a week from tomorrow. We're going to talk about the Heat being a season-best five games over 500, where the East stands. Don't know really where to start, but I want to sort of touch on everything early, Kurt, and then we'll sort of cycle back to the talking points of the day. Last night, Bam Adebayo, 30 points, I believe it was 15 rebounds, winning basket with 20.4 seconds left to play. No, he won't be an all-star starter. That's a popularity contest, 50% voted on by the fans. Giannis is a bigger name. Durant's a bigger name. Tatum is a bigger name. Embiid's a bigger name. I get all of that. So let's get people ready for next week, Kurt, when the conference coaches vote for all-star reserve. Is there any chance in hell that Bam Adebayo is not an NBA All-Star this season?
Yes, unfortunately, yes. Really? Just because when I started doing the numbers, you know, we've talked about this for weeks. I'm like, all right, there's four of at least six, probably seven front court players in the East. Four. When we get to the fifth one from, you know who's got to be on this list and we kept leaving him off? And this is going to drive Big O nuts when I say this. Jimmy Butler's got the stats. Jimmy Butler's got the numbers and the name, and he probably makes it. And then it ultimately comes down to you've got a DeRozan, you've got Adebayo, you've got a couple of guys that are pretty fighting
Julius
for the last
Randle, spot. Julius Randle, Pascal, yeah. Siakam. You know, I'm actually writing.
I think Siakam's probably in. So yeah, mm-hmm. I think Siakam's probably in. When I ran this exercise the other day and I put Butler and Siakam in after the top four, I put Bam in over DeRozan, but like that suddenly became the debate.
Over Miles Turner also?
Yeah, Indiana sucks.
Well, it's just a matter of timing. The Heat could not time this any better with where they are in the standings right now, Kurt Heelan, because obviously coaches look at winning and everything. To fill people in, the All-Star starters, there have to be three front-court players not delineated by center and two backcourt players. The vote, 50% from fan vote, 25% from media vote, 25% from player vote. No one takes this very responsibly, unfortunately. The fans vote for their favorite players, which they should. It's a fan contest. The writers, I know plenty of people like it's frazzled because you're also working a full shift trying to go through and crunch these numbers. Yeah. The writers probably do the best job. There will be a full delineation given out by the NBA tomorrow. And the player vote, you will see Haywood Highsmith get votes. Players who are guys who share the same agents who grew up with someone. You will see names on the players' vote released tomorrow. Guys with 2, 3, 4 votes at the very bottom. And you'll be going like, is anyone taking this seriously? So that's going to determine three front court starters. Like we said, because of all that's going on, Bam will make that. Even with Durant missing as much time as you will have by the time the All-Star game is played February 19th in Utah. Then the conference coaches will get the list of here's the starters. They will be charged with picking three reserve front court players, two reserve backcourt players in each conference, and then two wild cards, any position. Again, center is not delineated from forward. Most coaches take this somewhat seriously. Just about every coach I've talked to about this basically sits down with his staff and they all sort of go through the exercise together. Some coaches, I'm sure Kurt has heard this over the years, give the ballot, hopefully just to an assistant coach, but sometimes to a PR guy or someone like that also.
Let's put it this way. There's plenty of teams where it's not a coach on the front of the bench doing it. It's one of the backbench coaches.
It's other guys get involved. You know, we've all heard stories. Yeah. And coaches just have plenty on their plate. They're in the middle of their season. They get all that. The way it's structured right now, with the East backcourt not being overwhelming, where you're saying, okay, there have to be more guys like that. I would assume Kyrie and Donovan Mitchell are the starters in the East based on popularity, based on their contributions, based on where their teams stand. Then you get to the questions of what about the great teams? Does Jason Tatum, rather Jaylen Brown get in because of the Celtics being at the top of the conference? Drew Holiday, because he's carried the Bucks this season and what he's done. Certainly James Harden will get in because of his scoring and the fact that he's James Harden. So you have the top teams in the East right there, counting Kyrie from the Nets. Cleveland, you can make a case. I guess a guy we left out is Jared Allen, because he really is the anchor of that defense also. Although I think Darius Garland, as the second guard from Cleveland, probably has the stronger resume to this point. I think you'd agree with that, Kurt?
I do. Yeah, I don't think this is Jared Allen missed some time and actually probably helped his defensive player of the year case because they came apart without him. Like, but I don't think he's an all-star this year.
And here's my point to this. If coaches really are doing the voting, if coaches tell us what they say matters more than anything, Bam Adebayo does all of that. He is selfless on offense and passes the ball. He works his butt off, probably puts more of his overall energy on his defense than his offense. So I think if coaches vote from their heart and from what they tell us you should be, to me it's a no-brainer that Bam gets in that way. The Jimmy Butler thing is different. And this is interesting because this dovetails with what we were talking about with Big O and what we'll talk about later in the show, maybe even in this segment. He's not always there all the time. No. And while this case was an illness last night, there are other times where the knee is sore. It's a back-to-back that he pre-announced his back-to-back absences this season. Kurt, how much should absences count in all-star balloting? Should there be a definitive cutoff? And how can there be a cutoff when you vote for the reserves, when fans vote for starters? Kyrie missed a lot of time with his differences and his hurtful comments he made earlier in the season. Kevin Durant will miss maybe 6 weeks and just come back just for the All-Star game. So is it fair that in the starting voting, games missed doesn't count, but in the reserve voting it should? Where does Kurt Heelan, basketball expert, stand on this?
It's funny. I actually wrote about this because I am one of those guys with a vote, and spent this season spent too much time thinking about it, primarily because of the issue out West, where that third look, Jokic starts, LeBron starts, you get to that third spot, and you're like, it should be Anthony Davis or Zion. They've been the best, but Davis comes back tonight, but they have missed considerable time. Or do you put Domantas Sabonis in, whose numbers aren't quite as good, but shows up every night for his team? Like, that debate is interesting. And I said you kind of got to – I said, but it's a fan exhibition. At the end of the day, for starters, I said about 60% and to make the team about 50% of the games, because this isn't an end-of-season award. I feel differently about MVP or something like that. But middle of the season, man, I like watching Jimmy Butler play. If Jimmy Butler's been there for half the games, get him out on the court. But – it'll be interesting to see how the coaches feel about that, because I'm with you. It's an advantage for Bam Adebayo that the coaches vote, because as much as DeRozan puts up numbers, and I don't want to knock, but DeRozan's played great, Bam's a better all-around player. You would rather have Bam on your team.
And you'd rather have winning players from teams that have winning records to show that winning still matters. So I think that matters also. Want to touch on an ancillary issue here, and we will get into heat. I see the chat boards blowing up about people who want their refunds, and I get all of that. Kurt, the way they announced last night is they were literally like a pickup game. Pick guys on the court before the start of the game. I mean, I've been there. I'm sure you have it sometime also, being that last guy. But it's like between two guys and you're sort of saying, pick me, please. I don't want to be the last guy. I get that. And that just shows what the game isn't. A game. Number one, they're going to have a practice on Saturday with guys not even knowing what team they are. I don't know how. I'm very curious, Kurt, how the NBA handles All-Star Game practice.
East-West? Yeah, I guess East-West. I'm curious as well.
Right. And which coach coaches them, because you don't know which players you're coaching. Two, if ever there was a game, and you know this, Kurt, you've heard this before, coaches don't want to coach the All-Star Game. They want their three-day break. They want a Cancun with the players like everyone else. The NBA has been good. There's now a full 3 or 4 day break after, so you do get your vacation. But coaches don't want to be there. They might want to be named. They might want to get their staffs there. They don't want to be there. Well, how are they going to coach? They're not going to put in plays. It's literally going to be schoolyard. They're going to draw plays at the end of the game if they have to. It's all last minute. I like the idea, but it removes any pretense of a competitive game. of anything resembling basketball. I mean, we've seen this year the NFL's going to flag football. The NHL's gone to 3-on-3 and 4 different teams. I almost wonder if the NBA is trending there. I like that at least there's an honesty that this is not a game. This is not a sporting event. Yeah. This is a CNBC. And a matter of fact, one of the most dramatic parts of the All-Star game is the player introductions. I wonder how they do that. I guess they just say from the West and from the East, you know, and the starters and the non-starters. But I think that's going to be awfully, you know, interesting also. They've created something interesting, but they've sort of opened up, I don't want to say a Pandora's box because no one cares, but it becomes more interesting. But I want to go back to the salient points that I was trying to get to here. What Bam Adebayo did last night, agreed, against a shorthanded Celtics team, didn't have the defense of Al Horford or the full Celtics. Where on your continuum, Kurt Heelan, of star versus superstar, of all NBA, where I assume Jokic, with they do have centers in all NBA, I don't know why.
Yes.
Jokic will be first team all NBA based on him probably being MVP. Embiid probably will be second team based on how he pushes Jokic as the best center in the league, which leaves one more spot. Is Bam there? Is Bam, when you have the kind of year Sabonis is having, when you have the kind of year some of the other prominent big men are having, is Bam Adebayo star? Is Bam Adebayo superstar? Well, do we all need to sort of step back a little and go, in this league, you've got to do it for more than just a single half of the season?
Yeah, and I think that third spot, look, early on, it would have been Davis kind of running away with it. Anthony Davis was brilliant, but now he's missed the last 20 games. That's going to factor in at the end of the season. Bam's in there. I don't think he's in front of Sabonis, though, because of the winning. I mean, there's finally winning going on in Miami. Hopefully we'll get to that as well. But the Kings are a feel-good story, and Sabonis is in the middle of it putting up – I mean, guy puts up numbers. He defends like a traffic cone, but he puts up numbers every night. And there's going to be a sense, I think, from a lot of people that they want to reward the Kings somehow with Fox or Sabonis. So I would guess right now he'd probably be the front runner for third, and Bam would be in the mix with, like you said, Turner, and I'm probably forgetting some others off the top of my head.
No, I'd agree with that. I think Bam has reached the next level with another level to reach. It's weird.
I think he's a star.
If you would tell me that a guy shooting mid-range jumpers is a good thing, every analytic points against that. But when you make your mid-range jumpers or lane jumpers from the dotted line is such a high percentage that all of a sudden it's a money shot. He has his go-to shot. It might not be what coaches want, but it's what he does best. So I think he's made that move into that type of elite player. Matter of fact, the fact that we're debating Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo both as all-stars, I think also shows how, I don't know if I'll go negative here, but how poorly the Heat's complementary players have been playing. That if you have two guys at the top of their game, granted, Jimmy's missed time, Tyler's played well, but I think it really shows how the Heat's complementary players largely have fallen off the face of the earth, where the high point mark so far this season is only 5 games above 500. So I think that's interesting. We're getting swamped on the chat board, so I'm going to sort of make an executive decision here. Last week, I went light on it. It wasn't right. I know we'll be going all over the place. So, again, you got to listen to all 3 segments of our redrecover.com Inside the Paint, because we will be moving all over the place. But I want to let people chime in. Please go to our chat board on YouTube. Let us know what you're thinking. We'll be glad to go from there. First of all, Kurt's getting congratulated for being awake this early, West Coast. and some people are saying, I'm still half asleep, so good for you. So, like to
hear
that.
Green tea is my friend, man. Green tea. Green tea is your friend.
Look at you. There's a guy who's getting going and all that. So, let me see where he can. Alex chimes in here, and he wants to know, do you think the Heat are finally moving to their youth movement with Bam and Tyler? And while I like that, I know who Pat Riley is, and I think as long as Pat Riley, a 77-year-old patriarch of the Heat, is here, he will still look to older players. Kurt, from the outside, when you look at the Heat, do you say, there's a team of the future with Bam and Tyler, or do you say, there's a team of the present with Jimmy and Kyle?
They're straddling that line right now, but I think they're – this little run seems to have been a little more team of the future to me. Like, I mean, not, and by the way, Kyle had a really nice game the other night. Like, I think ultimately if they're going to make a playoff run, it's a melding this year, but they seem to be leaning. Bam's putting up 30. Tyler couldn't throw a pea in the ocean for the first
until that late
quarters, most of that game.
The first everything, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But he's had his good nights and his playmaking skills. I just think that they're I think that that's a good call, that they're leaning more into that, at least during the regular season. I'm just thinking the postseason, Jimmy's ability to get to his spots and make those shots.
Totally agree.
You have to have him. Yeah.
Jay chimes in here. Jay Gelfand chimes in. Gut check game for the win. Kudos to Hayward Highsmith on his best game yet. Kurt, doesn't that make the game kind of fun when you see a guy you don't know have a moment like that? Again, we don't want load management. You'd rather the stars be in there. I am sure if Jimmy Butler played, that Hayward Highsmith wouldn't have played. But what's it like nationally when people don't know who someone is? I know you followed him to a degree, but what's it like for you, just the neutral viewer, when you see a guy have a moment like that?
I think fans kind of like it. I'm a little different because, you know, A, I do this for a living. Like, I follow these guys. But also, Highsmith's the kind of guy, and there's these players, you see him at Summer League, and you don't see much of their development sometimes during the season. Then they pop up, and you're like, hey, look. It's fun, and I think for a lot of fans, it's fun to see. And I think for Heat fans in particular, that's a – and we've been kind of waiting on Highsmith. Where has he been? Right. Where has he been? Yeah. What's he been doing? I think in Miami, it's been a great story, and I think that energy in the arena around that translates.
We saw yesterday because some kid came from Argentina, couldn't get to see Jimmy Butler, had a sign. They traveled all these miles. You got to admit, Kurt, I don't know if they showed this on the national broadcast or whatever, but I thought the Heat reacted beautifully to that. They got him a jersey. They gave him a signed basketball. I think the one thing you see in the NBA is the players might appreciate load management. The coaches do. But I think, Kurt, you would agree, the front office, the executive types, those who sell tickets, they do cringe at those moments also. There's this fine line of basketball. There's this side, this basketball ops. They just want to win. But there's this side that's business side, and they realize, I think you would agree, the business sides realize it's a bad look.
And I think that's where ultimately, and the problem is this, I think ultimately, I think the owners are starting to recognize and getting through to most of your front. Pat Riley straddles that world, right? Yeah, he's basketball ops, but he's got his foot in the business side a little bit. I think they realize the problem. I don't know what the solution is. I mean, we could have a whole other segment about cutting games or doing this. There's no, if you get 70 Kerr, Steve, we talked about this last week. You put it to Steve Kerr, 72 games, guys are still going to skip games. Like, it's still going to be so about playoffs. It's going to be about winning.
I could not agree more. And we will get into this more on the other side of this break on redrecover.com inside the paint. We have a ton of things on the chat board. Matter of fact, we're going to go right back to the chat board after this break. I want to get there. Greater Good has some thoughts on Kyle Lowry that include the phrase commits felony. So we will get to that. And we'll also talk about load management. We'll talk about the Heat being 500. We'll talk about the upcoming schedule because, hey, it's basketball season. Enough with the NFL, at least down here in South Florida. All of that and more after this break on RedRecover.com, Inside the Paint.
This podcast replay is brought to you by RedRecover.com. From NFL stars like Hayden Hurst to daily warriors like yourself, their wraps and pads are designed to deliver maximum benefits with each treatment anywhere you go.
And we're back for our second of three segments this week on RedRecover.com Inside the Paint. I'm Ira Winderman from the South Florida Sun Sentinel here in Fort Lauderdale. He's Kurt Heelan from Pro Basketball Talk and NBCSports.com out in the Los Angeles area. If you missed our first segment, we talked about Bam Adebayo's candidacy. Probably is an all-star reserve to make the all-star game. You can download that segment on anywhere where the Big O Show podcasts are. You can always join us on our YouTube chat board, which I will get back to momentarily. We're going to talk about NBA load management. We're going to talk about where the Heat stand. But this is also your show. So feel free to grab us on the YouTube chat board. We'll even mention your name if you want. Want to go back here right away. I mentioned this to you, Kurt Heelan, before the break. Greater Good says, and again, this is a fan perspective, so I want to get a little bit more professional perspective from someone like you who's had six decades in this game. Kyle Lowry commits felony theft every time he cashes his check. Greater Good says, Kyle Lowry commits felony theft every time he cashes his check. Look, I don't think Kyle Lowry's not playing hard. I know that Kyle Lowry cares because it's his name and because you get comments like this. Kurt, from what you saw from Kyle Lowry in the championship season 2019 in Toronto, from what you thought that he might have been getting on a 3-year, $85 million contract when he signed in the 2021 offseason. Are you surprised we're seeing this Kyle Lowry? Or, as NBA followers, someone like you, you're saying to yourself, he's also 36 years old. This is sort of what you get. So, Kyle Lowry, a disappointment? Or Kyle Lowry, maybe this should have been the expectation?
It's happened faster than I thought it would. I kind of, when he signed that 3-year deal, I'm like, yeah, they're going to regret the last year of that. Like, this is that.
But this is the second to last year of that.
Yeah, it's the thing. I thought that the first year, which ended up, you know, he was up and down. But like this year, I thought you'd still get more Kyle. Just, I thought his game would age more Chris Paul like, in the sense that he's not a game. He's got some athleticism, and I think sometimes we forget how athletic Chris Paul was back in the day. But like their games, because it's a high IQ game, should age pretty well, and it's struggled this year. He struggled this year, and it's just come faster than I thought.
Yeah, he's played poorly. I know the knee is an issue. He's taken extensive treatment there. A matter of fact, for all the people who mention these Kyle Lowry trade rumors, I'm not so sure if someone gets his medicals, they're not moving in another direction. But this is interesting. I tend to stay away from the rumor market, but it tends to take on a life of its own. Kurt knows that. You have to address stuff. So I'm going to ask you this, Kurt, because you do go to a bunch of Clippers games. You're out there at the Crypt. You see all this stuff.
Yeah.
There had been a rumor mentioning the Clippers looking for something at point guard, possibly looking at Kyle Lowry. Does that make sense on any level to you? And let me just ask you this. I know it wasn't your rumor. I know you tend to comment on other rumors, not throw stuff out there without actually getting it sourced, but does it make any sense, Kyle Lowry, to the Clippers?
Yes, just because they desperately need an upgraded point guard. He is not their first choice, frankly. Mike Conley is kind of a better fit. Fred VanVleet is younger and, frankly, would be a better fit. But Lowry, Reggie Jackson's been bad. Let's just flat out. Reggie Jackson has not played well for them at the point, and they are using Terrence Mann, who, if you corner Ty Lue, will tell you he's a three.
Yes.
They're using him at the point.
The first thing I was going to say is he's not a point guard, exactly.
Yeah, but he's playing the point right now.
Has the John Wall thing failed? Again, I know there were people down here. John Wall has spent the last 2 years working out of Miami. He was here in Summer League. So many people were disappointed. Wait a minute, I thought he wanted to be here. Sort of sum up the John Wall experience, if you could.
He's an okay reserve at this point in his career. Like, he's not – he's at this point, as much craft as he worked to get into his game, it's not all the explosion anymore. And there's still moments where you're like, man, he's fast with the ball. It's been good to see him back, but he is a competent reserve. He's not what a team that the Clippers consider themselves a team that should be in the contending mix.
Right.
They don't see this. Wall 10, 15 minutes off a game, off the bench in the playoffs a game is one thing, but the load he's going to have to take on right now is too much. So they would, in fact, he's available if they could move him. He's one of those guys with a movable size salary. The Clippers have.
You know what? Let me throw something at you there, because we can get this aggregated somewhere else. If the Heat were to trade Kyle Lowry, if the Clippers want to do it, if the Heat took back John Wall, would that give the Heat enough at point guard with Gabe Vincent and John Wall to contend in the Eastern Conference playoffs?
No, I actually think it's a downgrade. As much trouble as Kyle's been, you're not getting more. Wall is not suddenly an upgrade unless you've got a DeLorean with a flux capacitor in the back.
So you don't think it would it be passable, Gabe Vincent and John Wall? In other words, is Wall not a huge downgrade from Kyle Lowry? I guess I'd want to phrase it that way.
Not a massive one, but a little one, yeah. A little bit of a downgrade.
And that's interesting there. So again, you know, even like I see the Timberwolves link to Kyle Lowry, but I'm seeing a different Kyle than maybe people are seeing in their you know, they're seeing rose-colored glasses or something like that. It seems to be a little different for me. It is an odd position, but I will tell you, that knee is not good. And that knee is having a lot of the type of things that get done to 36-year-old players. And Heat fans know this. It's almost like the Tim Hardaway situation. He was great. At moments, he could be great. But at the end of the Hardaway run, that Charlotte Hornets series, when they just collapsed at the end and they had to play Anthony Carter ahead of him, eventually you reach that expiration date. Again, I want to say on the chat board here, you can join us on our YouTube chat board on redrecover.com inside the paint. Gio brings up a question. The way he phrases this, Kurt, is, I pay the league pass and only watch one game. The new rules are making the games unwatchable for me. Here's the thing, Gio. The new rules were supposed to prevent this. The commissioner said when it comes to national television games, don't sit your players. There will be league action, and it might happen behind the scenes. But, Kurt, I have a real bone to pick with the NBA on what happened last night on a Turner National game, and that is this. If you want the Celtics to play Jaylen Brown and Al Horford and their players, why the hell were they scheduled on the second night of a back-to-back playing Monday in Orlando? Isn't that the exact opposite of what Adam Silver told us was going to happen?
Yeah, and it's what everybody was complaining about, the Warriors not playing all their stars in Cleveland, still losing the game and still winning the game somehow. But it was the same thing, second night of a road back-to-back. If you're going to put these guys, and both teams, frankly, on TNT and showcase them and want them to be there, then you've got to give them at least one, if not two nights off running into this, or this is what you run into. And it's hard to – the other thing teams have gotten really good at, which is what they did before there was DNP rest. At this point in the season, everybody can be sat for an injury. All 445 or whatever
exactly,
it is,
like I'm
NBA
told,
players.
Everyone has some sort of tendonitis somewhere.
Yeah, exactly. You want to sit somebody, there's a medical reason to do it. And so teams have just kind of moved away from rest per se. I mean, they do it occasionally.
Right.
They moved away from that as to, hey, sore back, hamstring tightness, you know, whatever. Pick your injury. They've all got something, and it's easy.
Jake chimes in here. He said the Heat needs wins for playoff positioning. This is sort of similar to what we're talking about with load management and players missing games. Kurt Heelan, how important is seeding really? And the reason I ask you this, Milwaukee went through a recent stretch where I think Giannis could have played, but they played it safe. Last night, Boston, obviously coming off a loss, would like to have won, but they played it safe with Jaylen Brown. You saw the Heat play it safe to a degree with Jimmy Butler not forcing him into the action. The East is so competitive from the top on down with Boston and Philadelphia and Milwaukee and Cleveland and where all the teams stand there in Brooklyn. How much do you think these teams are prioritizing number one seeding and home court versus getting their teams right for the playoffs? Where do you think that push-pull is in the East?
I think it varies a little bit team to team, but I think everybody's like the six, I don't want to say is the hard line, but it's absolutely the goal. You don't want to go into the play-in and play a couple extra potentially random games against games you may feel you should win, but it's the beauty of the beauty of the play-in is the beauty of the NCAA tournament, right? Which is any one night, any one game, you know, hey, we got the Knicks. We can totally beat the Knicks. Oh, shoot. Jalen Brunson just went off. Like,
right. And that's you why you at least want the seventh seed. I'll explain to people real quick how the play-in works. Seeds 1 through 6 basically play on a Sunday, get the rest of the week off, start the playoffs the next weekend. Seeds 7 through 10, you have two games to open the play-in round. Seeds number 6 host seed number 7 host seed number 8. The winner of that game is the number 7 seed. They're done. At the same time, or the following night, seeds 9 and 10 play. Whoever loses is out. Then the loser of the 6-7 game gets one more chance against the winner of the 9-10 game for the number 8 seed. So it's not one and done if you get the number 7 or 8 seed. You'll have a road game in there, then possibly a home game, but you get two chances. The 9 and 10, you have to win twice. It's two win or go home kind of games there. You're a little more pressure. Of course, coaches love to have a whole week to game plan. When you finish with the number, especially the number 3, 4, 5, or 6 seeds, you know who you're going to play in the first round. So you're done that Sunday. You're game planning for Giannis, for Harden, for Durant, whoever finishes in that 3 or 4 hole against you, you can get going. So I get all of that. You want to avoid the play-in, but if you have to play in the play-in, number 7 is not a bad place to be. You're hosting the 7-8 game, and if you lose, you're hosting the 8 against the 9 or 10 game. You get a couple of chances there. Not optimal either. Anyway, that's how the play-in works. I know I'm all over the place today, but I'd rather deal with our listeners than just have to go with an agenda. So going to segue off of that to this. I didn't realize this last night till I got home. I looked at the standings. The Heat are only two games behind the Cleveland Cavaliers for the number 5 seed. A little bit of breathing room not to be in that number 6. Kurt Heelan, are you surprised Cleveland's come down to earth? Could you see the Heat passing the Cavaliers?
Passing seems like a lot. Passing seems hard, but they are, you know, Mitchell.
It's two games.
Donovan Mitchell came back last night and then tweaked his, on like the last play, was down there grabbing that hamstring again. If he misses time, they have holes in that lineup. And although Okoro's been suddenly filling one of them lately, and filling it up, but I think they're a flawed roster and to a degree. And I think they're, look, we've been talking about them. I think in a couple of years, they're going to be a beast, but I think they're still figuring some stuff out and their depth isn't there. It's possible that they keep sliding. We'll see how they handle this as kind of a young team in the dog days of the year, where they might be one of those teams right now. And it's a chance to make up ground. There are a lot of teams right now looking at their watch going, when's the All-Star break? When does it come? When's that? There's a lot of teams looking ahead. They've got their flight booked to Cancun or wherever. And they kind of coast for a couple of weeks. You can make up some ground in these couple of weeks.
No, and I see that, especially teams that weren't expected to be as good as they wind up being.
Yeah.
I think teams like that, it's exhausting to maintain that spot in the playoffs. Yes. It's interesting to me in this respect. I know the Cavaliers are not last season's Cavaliers. Obviously, they have Donovan Mitchell this year. They're a different makeup. They don't have Markkanen. They're not going at the three bigs as much. But last year, Cleveland was very good early also. And everyone thought they were going to be a top six seed. And all Cleveland said is, we don't want to make the play-in. Then they made the play-in. Then they were done. So I am curious for the guys who were still there, for the Darius Garlands and the Jared Allens and the Mobleys and the Love, if there's not this little sense of, ooh, here we go again. We're going to wind up in this position again. So I think it is a little interesting. I would keep an eye on the Cavaliers. And again, in the win column, the Heat are only 3 games behind the Nets. So it is getting a bunch closer there. So I think that's sort of another interesting factor, how things are bunching up. Want to get through as many of these as I can. In the old Miami Arena days, this is from Greater Good. We went to see the cavalcade of NBA stars passing through. The product has been diluted. 60 games should be enough. Kurt Heelan mentioned this in our crosstalk with Big O. We've mentioned this since Steve Kerr talked about a 72-game schedule. I am in agreement. No matter how few games you schedule, players will miss games. Correct, Kurt?
Yeah. It is the way of the world right now. You will get maybe fewer missed games, especially with the stars, but you're going to get some. There are still going to be nights on the road where they just, if it's about winning championships, if the basketball side is about, as it is in Miami, then you're thinking, I've got to get these guys to the playoff, start of the playoffs as fresh as possible, and especially late in the season. But even now, what they've learned is it's cumulative. And, man, Butler's just going to get nights off, especially older players. Kyle's going to get nights off, man. And teams coming through are going to look at this as a, hey, do we have to play them kind of game?
Yeah. It's just interesting. And the other point I want to make is this, and especially Kurt knows this living out in L.A. and all the traffic and everything. NBA fans prefer to go to games on Friday nights because they don't have work the next day. On Saturdays because there's less traffic, and on Sunday early when they can get to a game. NBA teams try to get as many as possible. They call them weekend games, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So this notion of the NBA, like Steve Kerr said, expanding the schedule, well, teams still want to play on Friday, Saturdays, and Sunday.
Yep.
So even if there's not back-to-backs, they want the Friday, Sunday. There's still going to be a quick turnaround between, say, a Friday night game and a Sunday afternoon game. Other teams are going to say, well, wait a minute. They played at home on Friday, but we want a home game on Saturday when they do these, you know, against the other team.
Yep.
So you still have that compactness. No one wants in NBA marketing to have to sell the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, or Thursday games. Those are hard sells. People who do the split season ticket packages, those go last in the draft of games, even against good opponents. I mean, Kurt, I'll put it this way, and I know LA has traffic all the time. Getting to a Lakers, especially when they move it up to one of these, a 7 o'clock start, let's say, when they do 10 o'clock national TV games, how much harder is it to get to a Lakers game on a Tuesday night versus an early start on a Sunday, a 6 o'clock start?
Yeah, because the Lakers play in downtown LA where there's just a lot of businesses and a lot of people coming in, it's a lot more difficult. I mean, I'm getting there early, and if I leave my house 15 minutes, and by the way, I have the little cheater pass for people who know LA. You can buy a pass that gets you, they did away with essentially a toll lane on the side of the freeway. They did
away with the express lane.
Express lanes. Okay. So I don't know if you had them. They, even with that, if I leave 15 minutes later than my target time, it is exponentially longer to get to Staples
Center. And I know that because
that's true for everybody.
Yeah, and I'll stay at the airport, but I know if I don't leave 3 hours before the game and wait a little longer, whether it's the 110, you know, or whether it's the 10 or whatever I'm taking up there, it's you're just dead, 405, something like that. So again, this talk about thinning out the NBA schedule is all well and good as long as teams are willing to say, okay, we're going to play two games this week on a Tuesday and a Friday. But fans go, what about Saturday and Sunday? That's the difference.
Well, go look at the NBA schedule from the 60s and 70s when they were playing 82 games. Don't get me wrong. They did three games. They would play Friday, Saturday, Sunday all the time.
Because that's when fans want to go to games. That's when they want to go to games. So I get all that. We still have a ton to cover. I want to get into the Heat season. They're ascension up the standings. We will get to that. We will get to plenty more of your questions until we run out of time when we come back after this break on RedRecover.com Inside the Paint.
This podcast replay is brought to you by RedRecover.com. From NFL stars like Hayden Hurst to daily warriors like yourself, their wraps and pads are designed to deliver maximum benefits with each treatment anywhere you go.
And we're back for segment three of an action-packed RedRecover.com Inside the Paint show this week. If you missed either of our first two segments, in our first, we talked about Bam Adebayo's All-Star Game candidacy. In our second, we took a whole bunch of your questions, which I'm going to get back to right now on the chat board. We'll sum up the Miami Heat's week ahead. Hopefully, we'll have time by the end of this. Missed any of them, go to the Big O Show online, any of his podcast outlets. You can catch that. Join us on the chat board at YouTube. Join his super chat. We'll definitely read your question. Kurt, I want to, before I go to the chat board, because we're sort of all over the place here today, Miami Heat, five games over 500, which I think people expected a lot sooner this season. A lot of it has to do with the schedule, but I want to get to one point that people have been pointing out, and I think it's a league-wide thing that goes into what we're talking about rest days. I've had a bunch of people telling me, Ira, the record, they played the Bucks without Giannis two games. They got the Pelicans without Zion and Ingram for two games. Last night, they got the Celtics without Jaylen Brown for a game. Early in the season, they played them without Robert Williams for a game. But, Kurt, someone like you who chronicles the entire league at Pro Basketball Talk and NBCSports.com, isn't that what everyone does? In other words, when it's your team, people tend to minimize your win saying, well, who have you really beaten? And someone sent me an email the other day that really hit home with me. He asked me this question, and I almost wanted to research it. He said, Ira, has there been a single NBA game this season when both teams had all their players? And I'd almost wonder, I might go back to probasketballtalk.com later this week and see if Kurt writes about that. But Kurt, isn't that what everyone's doing with their record now? In other words, Heat fan doesn't chronicle what the Bucks have done or the Celtics have done to build their record. Doesn't see who the Nuggets have played to build the best record in the Western Conference. Isn't that just sort of in today's player sit out league? You just have to take them no matter who's there and who's not there. And everyone does that.
Yeah, my first thought was, yeah, I bet there were those first 3 weeks of the season. There probably were some games.
You know what? But that's when you had Lonzo Ball and LaMelo Ball out. That's when you had all the guys coming back from off-season surgeries.
And there were certainly guys who missed large chunks right at the start of the season, too. Memphis kept winning games, and they just got Jaren Jackson Jr. Right. Just got old. Bane missed a bunch of time. All these teams at the top have missed – actually Sacramento's like the one I was looking at the other day where I'm like, wow, they've been lucky. Like everybody else has been not as fortunate, but I think it always kind of builds itself in. It's when you catch teams and when they catch you for that matter. But like, we cut the Bucks without Giannis. Did we take advantage of that? Like that's ultimately what matters because that's just kind of, like you said, that's just kind of the way the league is right now.
You know, it's interesting to me. But it's almost as if the signature wins this season have been by the shorthanded teams, almost playing into the whole thing. Yeah. In other words, Golden State goes in after that great national television game in Boston, plays no one against the Cavaliers, and Steve Kerr finds a way in that game. The Heat earlier the season played the Grizzlies without Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson. The Grizzlies won. Kurt, you saw the game in L.A. when LeBron and Anthony Davis were out for the Lakers. The Lakers still found a way to beat the Heat in that game. It's almost like the signature wins this year are when we don't have ours and you have yours, we try to win. It's almost become like dodgeball, the underdog story. I mean, I think that's where the NBA is right now. And I do think coaches like Steve Kerr relish those moments. when they can go in undermanned and still make a statement. And even to a degree last night, when Eric Spoelstra can say, okay, I don't have Jimmy Butler. I don't want to hear it. We're still going to find a way.
Yeah, I think coaches get up for that challenge a little bit. And they see it as a test of their culture. Hey, we've been preaching we're bigger than the stars. We've been preaching that Highsmith has to step up and these other players. So let's do it. These guys are going to have – they want to see that. And I think you get – and by the way, for those guys, this is your moment, man. You want more minutes. Go out there and get those minutes. Those guys are playing for not just future paychecks, but they're playing for more run this season or more opportunities next offseason because they caught somebody's eye. They're going all out in a game where the starters might be like, hey, man, they don't got Jimmy Butler. We got this, you know?
Yeah, it's become odd there. My other question to this, and I'll try to get to the chat board before we're done here also, is Kurt, to tight and compacted standings. I mean, if you look at the West, I think it's like that's 5 through 13.
Yeah.
It's like within 2 games. I mean, the Lakers, a 3-game winning streak, could be out of the play-in and up to a regular playoff spot. East, very competitive also. We're seeing that Boston and Milwaukee, maybe Philadelphia actually now distancing themselves a little. Does a tightly compacted standings alignment make teams more likely to make a move by the February 9th NBA trading deadline to distance themselves? Or does it leave them the other way saying, we're close enough right now. Let's get continuity and we'll be better there. How do you think compacted standings will impact the February 9th trading deadline, both for the Heat and the league in general?
I think in general, what you get is teams looking to buy and not sell
how
exactly. And that's the challenge with the market right now is that outside of Utah is probably going to sell and Charlotte's probably going to sell, but there's not a bunch of teams like lining up. Everybody's looking at the Bulls and the Raptors. Like, are you going to stick with this? And they're kind of like, or we're just going to keep our prices really high. And if somebody meets it, fine. And I think I think it's going to be another relatively quiet trade deadline. Who's the best player that gets moved? Collins, Bogdanovich, Rui Hachimura.
But here's the question. There's already been a trade. Rui Hachimura went from the Wizards to the Lakers. Couple of second round picks, former Heat player Kendrick Nunn. So now the market for the player who doesn't fit in one place seemingly has been set as a couple of second rounders and a contract. So that could be the market, say, for a McDermott. That could be the contract maybe for a Josh Richardson, that kind of player. Yeah. Where I think there was the fear that the Rudy Gobert market. It's interesting. Yeah, even Rui Hachimura, I think you'd agree with that. Everyone says they want a first-round pick. Houston wants a first-round pick for Eric Gordon. Everyone is saying that that's the market, and I think the market changes a little bit. Do you think the Rui Hachimura trade for the Lakers changed the market on what it takes to get a mid-level number 7 or 8 player contributor on your roster?
Yeah, but 7 or 8 players everywhere else. He'll start for the Lakers. Watch. A little bit, but I think that's just the market coming back to, like, that's not an unfair deal for Hachimura to me. That seems like where the market's going to land. First would be too high. I think teams right now are still at, hey, you want Eric Gordon? It's a first. You want Bogdanovich? It's not just a first. It's an unprotected first. Like, eventually, I think that market reels back a little bit, and then you get deals done closer to the deadline. But I think that this sets, I think you're right in the sense that this sets a, hey, if you just want to get a deal done, if you're looking to get a real deal done, this is about where the market is.
And again, because you're out there based in LA with Pro Basketball Talk and NBCSports.com, I also wanted to get into the Kendrick Nunn situation from this aspect. Everyone talks about how the Heat overvalued their developmental players, how they go out and give these Duncan Robinson, Tyler Johnson contracts over the years. And yet, in the 2021 offseason, when the Heat had a decision on Kendrick Nunn, they punted. They took away his qualifying offer. They could have matched any outside offer, and they let him walk to the Lakers. Has an injury, misses an entire season, a crazy situation, what seemed like a very minor situation in the preseason, misses the entire 2021 season. This season been uneven. Is there anything left of Kendrick Nunn? Was he simply caught in the Lakers' morass? Because it seemed like right before he was traded, he showed signs of life. What is Kendrick Nunn now in the NBA?
Yeah, he played a little better over the last, I don't know, weeks, we'll say. He seemed to be finding a groove. This might be a situation where just a change of scenery helps. He gets to Washington. They've got minutes. Like, he can get in the guards. They were heavy at forward and light at guard, a little lighter at guard, and they can give him some run, and maybe he finds a comfort level and gets back to being a solid rotation kind of guard. I think he can be there again. He's shown flashes of it, but he's got to get healthy and kind of just, he feels like one of those guys still trying to trust himself again after the injury, if that makes sense.
And I agree with that. Maybe sort of rocketed up there at the beginning, but it sort of is what he is. The other element of that trade is because, of course, every team's fan base looks at a trade and says, why not us? Kendrick Nunn was just a throw-in for salary. The Heat could have made that kind of trade also, a couple of second-round picks, say Dwayne Dedman's contract. As long as it's expiring, that's what it took. Rui Hachimura, what he is right now, what we thought he was going to be coming out of Gonzaga, did the Lakers snooker the rest of the league in getting Rui, and who is Rui to the Lakers?
See, he fits – this is one of those cases where he's going to be more valuable to them than he certainly was in a overloaded front court where Kuzma's the focus now in Washington. They don't have a 6'8 backup guy for LeBron who can kind of come in. He's a good catch-and-shoot guy, isn't a bad defender. Like you said it earlier, he's what, 7th, 8th? Like, he's a solid rotation, not a starter kind of guy.
Right.
But they don't have anybody like this. And so for them, it'll be, I don't want to say a revelation, but he's going to be a quick fan favorite and put up some numbers just because he's filling a wide open space on this team where they just, when LeBron sits and they're it's Juan Toscano-Anderson at the four. Like, they don't have anybody who can step into this role. So I think fit always, when you get to role players, Ira, you know this. I think the fans realize this.
Right.
It's all about fit. And Hachimura is a much better fit in L.A. than he was in Washington.
But one thing I don't understand about that trade is this. Rui Hachimura is an impending free agent.
Yeah.
We've heard all along the Lakers didn't discard the Westbrook contract for money now because they want to have money in the offseason. I think they would have had something like $38 million or so in free agency to go out, maybe sign Kyrie Irving if he hits the market and wants to leave, or another semi-elite, almost max free agent. In order to either re-sign Rui or use his qualifying offer to hold against the cap, they lose that. Kurt Heelan, am I missing something? The Lakers always go big. They go big in a LeBron signing. They go big in the trades they've made. They try names like Westbrook and Dwight Howard anyway. If Rui Hachimura and then a $15 million free agent is all the Lakers get, what am I missing here?
I think that they realize they're not going to get much with free agency because you're right. This does – even – they're going to have to – without getting into a lot of cap minutia, expect him to get re-signed or extended really quickly.
For a lower number.
A reasonable number because his cap hold will be way more than – his cap hold's like $18 million and nobody's paying him that. So
okay, so let's say,
sign
let's
him
say,
at the lower
let's
number.
Say he gets,
but you eat it – but if you eat into that cap space, I think that they're going to go – I think they're thinking trade. I think that they're suddenly looking forward thinking, there's nobody we're going to get with the money we have. So now they're thinking trade and swap, which is a whole different discussion.
Trade who? Westbrook's an impending free agent.
Yeah.
What do they have?
There's picks. They've got those two picks.
But
they don't have much. They don't have much. There's such a top-heavy roster. There's not a lot of swappable salaries. It's a mess. They have not built that team wisely.
Want to get to the schedule? Want to try to get back to the chat board? Sorry, we're running out of time here a little bit. The Heat on Friday, next game, they get 2 days off. So the rest hopefully won't have to load manage players Friday. Orlando's a hell of a story this year, isn't it, Kurt Heelan, the Orlando Magic?
Yeah, and they are getting – Jonathan Isaac is now back, which is a fun – after 2 years off, it's just good to see him back on the court and playing. Banchero is your runaway rookie of the year and looks like a franchise cornerstone guy.
Is he an all-star? To go back to our first segment?
I don't think so. I mean, maybe they surprised me, but I thought he was a notch below that, but
he's close to all-star level this year.
He's getting there though. I think he's got somebody's got to score on a bad team numbers a little bit, but that said, he is putting up numbers. But he looks good. Franz Wagner is a player.
Yes.
Like, they've got – if you sleep on this – and they're playing hard pretty much every night now. They've been winning some
Jamal
games. Like
Mosley.
If you,
yep.
if you sleep on them, they will cause you problems.
I spoke to someone who was close to that team, and they told me they thought the Magic were screwing up, that they could use one more quality draft choice and then really get going. Are the Magic winning too much?
I don't know. In a flattened lottery, maybe not. Okay. I'd have to look at – by the way, I off the top of my head, I'm not sure where they land in the
– Well, I'm just saying the bottom four seeds all get a pretty equal chance. Right. We know that Houston and San Antonio are horrible in the West. Detroit and Charlotte have the bottom two seeds seemingly locked up in the East.
Yeah.
I thought Orlando would be there, so that surprises me. Want to get to the Heat game after that. It's the Sunday 1 p.m. game in Charlotte. Kurt Heelan, take us through the NBA mentality. You're playing a horse crap opponent. You're playing at 1 in the afternoon, knowing you're going to fly off during the football playoff games right after that. The Heat should beat the Hornets because the Hornets suck. The Heat should beat the Hornets because Ball is constantly being injured in and out. But that 1 o'clock can be a trap, can it? 1 o'clock start, show up to the arena at 10 a.m.
Everything that throws off a player's routine just throws randomness into a game, and that's absolutely what happens here. The Hornets are bad. They should absolutely win this game, and you've got to count this as a win, and it's on Spoelstra to get them motivated and focused because, like you said, guys are not in their routine. They don't like waking up early. They don't play like this. They are exactly thinking about how are we watching the NFL game if we've got to fly? What are we doing here? How are we making this work?
Is the Wi-Fi good? We're going to get to other games after that. We're actually going to move up the show next week to Tuesday. I don't know if Big O told you, because I'll be flying to New York next Wednesday. It's the start of a three-game trip, so there's a game in Cleveland next Tuesday. We'll preview that next week. Then a game in New York, which for seeding is very important. I'm going to try to go as quick as I can to the chat board. Need one or two-word answers here, Kurt, and we'll try to get as many of these knocked out. Let me see where we are right now. Mostly, I guess people are just talking about the amount of games and what's going on right now. So I guess we'll sort of end it right here. You don't see any solution this year, do you, for load management? And should this just be the expectations? And number two, should the Miami Heat continue to load manage with players like Kyle Lowry and Jimmy Butler because there are more important things ahead for them?
Not only is there not a solution this year, there is not a solution in the CBA that solves this problem 2 years from now, 3 years from now. I'm not sure what the answer is, but I don't think there's some simple magic bullet here. And it depends on where you are. If you're securely in the top six at some point later and you get into March, give Jimmy and Kyle some nights off because you need them fresh. But right now you're not on such stable ground that you can't afford losses in Charlotte on Sunday.
Well, I'm going to ask you that. I'm going to finish the show on that. Is it too ballsy for the Heat to say the Hornets suck, so we're giving Kyle the day off, even though they're off on Saturday the day before and off on Monday the day after? Or is that just today's NBA?
That's just today's NBA. And besides, you've got UCSB's Gabe Vincent, Gauchos for life. He's going to be fine.
So that'll be good also. Covered a lot of ground. If we didn't get to you on the YouTube chat board, I apologize. Hey, we tried. We'll be back right here next week. I believe on Tuesday we'll check that with the boss. But right now, after our RedRecover.com Inside the Paint show, the Big O Show rolls on.